Welcome to another episode of GEQ Speaks, your go-to platform for insightful conversations, captivating stories, and thought-provoking discussions. GEQ is a series of experiences, and we're just making sense of that as we go along. That is what we're doing here, one conversation at a time. So sit back, relax, and let's dive into our episode.
Big news coming out of the Texas A&M Board of Regents meeting this afternoon.
Yeah, the Texas A&M University System today voted on closing its campus in Qatar by 2028.
It's just in. Texas A&M plans to close its Qatar campus by 2028. Today's vote ends a 20-year program.
And Board Chairman Bill Mahomes says that the board decided that the core mission of Texas A&M University should be primarily in the state of Texas and in the United States.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All against?
Aye.
Okay, so noted. Thank you. A majority of the board having voted in favor of this motion, it is approved.
Seven to one. This is the outcome of the unilateral vote from the Board of Regents meeting in College Station, Texas on February 8th, 2024. Board Chairman Bill Mahomes stated that the work in Qatar is great work, but it is only a fraction of what Texas A&M accomplishes year after year. His words marked the end of a 21-year run for Texas A&M in the Arabian Peninsula. Graduating more than 1,500 engineers and currently serving over 730 students, the A&M Board of Regents' abrupt decision to cancel an existing 10-year contract with Qatar Foundation came with no public discussion, no input from its Qatar branch, and just one regent actually voting against the motion, as we just heard from the live recording of the board meeting in College Station. With QF claiming to be completely blindsided by the decision and their estimated $75 million yearly funding in support of the campus being virtually unable to sway the board's decision, the Multiversity Community of Education City, that by the way features five other US-based universities, is left reeling, with only questions about what comes next for them. For in one fateful moment, geopolitics and a lack of transparency has shattered the dreams of over 700 students halfway across the world. So how should we be actually feeling towards this news? What does it mean for the future of Education City? Is this a wake-up call? Or is it something that we should have long anticipated? Well, we're joined here today by two very special guests to ponder over some of these lingering questions and collectively give our two cents over the ongoing developments. So before we move on any further, I would first like to introduce you all to Abdullah bin Masood, Club Coordinator for GEQ Speaks, who for the very first time today has joined us as a guest for this episode. Abdullah, how does it feel like to be on the other side of the table for a change?
Thank you, Ibrahim. It's different. It's entirely different being on the other side of the table. I've been hosts. I've conducted these interviews. But now that I'm guest, I'm in the hot seat, I guess. So it's different.
So we're glad to have you here. And so moving on to our two guests for today. Also, for the very first time, we have been joined by members from outside the GEQ community. Now, this is the first for GEQ Speaks as well. Please join me in welcoming Muhammad Saad and Muhammad bin Mughis from the Texas A&M class of 2024. Guys, we're truly grateful for your presence here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
So thank you both for joining us here today. I'll just start us off by giving you guys the floor. Because honestly, a lot has happened over the past 2 months. And I just want you to just like walk our listeners to whatever has been going on in Texas A&M Qatar ever since this unfortunate news broke out.
All right. So the day this news broke out, I was in Pakistan for the Pakistani general elections. And the news basically came out at 1 a.m. During that time, I was more focused on the political arena and what's happening with the vote count and stuff. So when the news initially came out and I looked at it, it didn't really seem significant to me at that point. Compared to an election of a country, university closing down might not be that significant in my mind.
Shades in comparison.
Exactly. At that point, it wasn't really the case. So again, the next day, I really wasn't focused on it. But then the day I got back to university and time at Q and I started speaking to people, I saw there was a difference in the environment. Our dean, I think I saw him around. He didn't say the word howdy, which was a bit interesting. People just stopped saying that word and I resorted back to saying hi or salam alaikum. It felt a bit different. And then I kind of realized, I saw the freshmen as well. The freshmen felt a bit odd. They were, the people that are most affected by this, I'd say, is the freshmen, the staff, and the faculty. So just speaking to them, and I didn't want to go to my faculty for the first weekend because I didn't know what to say to them. Will you lose your job? What's going to happen? It's a bit scary, you know, to think about it from their angle. We had a class with one of our TAs. He was teaching it, and then someone just asked out of nowhere that, what do you feel? And he just started there, and he was a bit awkward as well. So I guess initial opinion is, it hit our institution, and there's still a lot of information that has to be given to us, for the transition to happen smoothly.
Okay. As Saad stated, it was Thursday night when this information came in. I think we had an event, by one of the student organizations. And right after that event concluded, this information came in. Nobody sort of realized what the intensity of this information was. But as soon as people started to understand and realize what was going on, it hit like a truck to everyone. Especially, honestly, the junior students, like people who are like freshmen and sophomores, they felt like they don't know what to do. They don't know where to go because it's for their senior year. They won't be having the same institution and the same education as I had, for example, as a senior. I've had basically three batches under me. They won't be having the same idea and the same style of studying. And it's going to mess up the overall aura of the university and how the university, basically, how the university experience plays out for them.
Yeah, and honestly, like once the news broke out, like for you guys as well, I would say the experience was kind of similar for us as well. I was speaking to certain, you know, staff members who were telling me that the experience, as you just narrated, of getting the email at 1 a.m., it was kind of similar for them as well. Like our dean also emailed it immediately through, like I assume it's kind of like a secure line that they have between staff and like the higher administrative authorities. So they were informed about this, early on in the late hours of the night. And then like right the first thing in the morning, all Georgetown students received an email. Like it was kind of a reassuring email, I would say, that just sort of informed us about how this won't reflect on us. And essentially it's not something that we should be worried about or concerned with at the moment. Mm-hmm. And you know, soon enough, the dean of Georgetown, he organized a majlis for all students in which he invited everyone to have tea with him. And me and Abdullah had the pleasure of joining the dean for that majlis. And even though it was like assumed to be like behind closed doors, and the dean was like, make sure that all of the information I share over here doesn't go outside this room. But still, he shared a very reassuring response, I would say. So Abdullah, I would want you to reflect on that for a little bit, like how you were there with me. So what did the dean walk us through? How was that experience for you as a Georgetown student like?
Yeah, so before I explain that, I'd just say that obviously it was a shock to everyone, not just the Texas student, or to other students in EC as well. I can't imagine how bad it was for Texas students, for you guys, but it came as a shock to other EC students as well. And there was this kind of uncertainty that we felt after the email. We were like, okay, are we next? There were questions like that because we first had a president of Yale NUS, and we used to talk about it, how Yale NUS ended their contract with NUS in Singapore. And now just in our neighborhood, right besides us, Texas being another example, another precedent. So there was a lot of, you know, kind of uncertainty, a lot of grief over it as well. So it was very reassuring for the dean to send that email. Like that email was sent instantly the next day, I believe, after the news was launched. And it was very reassuring for the body. And to further reassure things, he had this majlis in which the dean basically informed us how well connected we are with the main campus and informed us about a few key things that are particular to Texas, that are specific for Texas, and their relationship between the main campus and the Qatar campus. And those things are specific to Texas only, which is why we do not have to worry about these things because they don't apply to Georgetown. And he also reassured that Georgetown Qatar's relationship with the main campus is much better. And we see that as well. We see the dean hosting teams and students from the main campus over here. We see the dean himself visiting the main campus, taking part in important board meetings. So it was a great reassurance that it's not going to happen to us. But at the same time, I feel for you guys. I feel for the freshmen at Texas. It's going to be a bumpy ride for them until senior year. So yeah, that's the response of the Georgetown community.
No, definitely. I mean, the point that you just mentioned about being very well connected with your main campus is obviously very important to any satellite campus that's established anywhere in the world. And obviously the closure of Texas A&M comes with a plethora of different reasons. And one of the reasons that to our understanding has like stood out in that is like probably unique to your aspect is how, you know, Texas is essentially a red state. And the governor of Texas is a very radical stance towards, you know, the involvements of U.S. outside of, you know, its geographical boundaries. So I want you guys to like reflect on that a little bit and just like essentially like walk us through how you feel like factors that are like beyond your control played, you know, enough of a role in this kind of a decision to just like pop up in the front in the first place. And then like besides that, how do you think the inherent factors that are unique to your linkage to your main campus, like how much of the share of the blame would you lay to, you know, those kind of reasons in this aspect?
Right. So before the closure, our relationship with the main campus was quite good. We used to have programs. We used to have the summer leadership exchange program, which will continue. We had the summer exchange program. We had Muhammad here. He's gone for study abroad as well. Recently, we had SEC students, which is one of the student organizations, come over here and kind of like give a presentation about what they do. So there has been that. Our dean has an office over there as well. In the Zachary Engineering Building, there's a specific office for the Qatar Satellite Campus as well. So, I mean, that relationship was always there. We've always had executives and deans from there also come and kind of be here. So I think it was unexpected on that. And in terms of, I forgot your question.
So I was talking like in terms of like factors that lie like outside your
right,
control.
Right. Okay. So we got to understand that what happened in the background. So initially what we thought was that it was the president's decision. But after conversations with obviously the dean and because the way this happened was not right in our minds. Thursday night, Friday morning-ish, we got the announcement. And then Sunday we had a town hall. And that town hall, we didn't really get to speak. We were just able to send the questions across on Zoom and then they just answered a few questions. And to be fair, they didn't really know a lot at that point as well. And that's been recognized by the president there and the dean here that it should have been done better. So that was the background. And basically what happened was we had the Board of Regents who kind of voted. I think you played that video at the very start. And they were responsible for it. From what we've been told is that the president over there tried to advocate for us and tried to make sure that this does not happen. But I mean, it is what it is. So this kind of has to be understood. And there's been a lot of rumors and a lot of information running around about TimeQ's closure, the different aspects, the different reasons. I mean, we do not know anything for sure as to what happened. We know that things like this, this thing about TimeQ closing down might have been brought up before, but it wasn't really taken seriously. Now it was. It's just unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah, I think honestly, Saad has summed it up pretty nicely. But even like our university and the main campus, we were kind of blindsided in a sense by this decision. Even the both the parties did not really know what was happening
exactly.
So I wouldn't say that honestly they had a really big part. But then again, this decision was made and now we look forward to how we're going to move on.
Yeah, and like speaking of like how you feel like the student body in particular was like blindsided with this kind of a decision, like it's obviously like natural to believe that the uproar among students would have been like, you know, like they might have not received this news very well as like one would expect them to, obviously. So like how was that response like, especially in terms of like your student government or like in general your student body? I know both of you represent like, you know, different batches from the mechanical or the electrical department of your universities. So how was the response of like your batches in that aspect particularly like towards this news?
Okay, so honestly, as soon as this news came, there was an aura of sadness. And like, the overall morale went down. People got sad. And like, the overall attendance of classes dropped down as well. And similarly, like within all the students, you can see it in the faculty and the staff and the overall energy and the vibe of the university. But like beyond that, beyond the weeks, like once we had the town hall and we got a better understanding of what's happening, the university has tried its best to get the morale up, and it's still going up right now, but it's still not back to where it was.
Yeah. So our STA did a fabulous job, I must say, because they kind of got everyone together. Our president as well of the STA kind of made sure that the information kind of gets across to us. One of the good things that our dean's office, I think, did was they made a student advocacy committee. So we're fortunate to be on that committee, and they kind of like give us that information and we can pass it on to the students as well. The initial reaction of the student body, if I were to speak on behalf of the mechanical students, was mainly confusion of a lot of things as to like what's happening. What about our faculty and staff? What's going to happen to them? What's going to happen to our senior design? What's going to happen to the things that we're doing? That was mainly the seniors. If you think about the freshmen, again, they were just confused. I think they were all over the place as to what we'll do, what will happen to us. Will we get a TAMU degree or will we get a non-TAMU degree? It was a lot of confusion. And I think some of the questions have been answered so far, but there's still a lot of answers, questions that have to be answered. And once they have, I think everything should calm down.
Okay, so Abdullah, I'll come back to you now. Let's go back to the majlis again. So while you were busy asking your, I would say, fiery questions to the dean, I, on the other hand, was taking a lot of notes. And I was meticulously noting down every word that the dean was saying. So what I have here for you is now a couple of hypothetical scenarios that I would want you to answer.
Sure.
And considering how you're also the president of the consulting club, this is something I assume you'll be very proficient in. So let's start with the first scenario I have here for you. Let's say, God forbid, Georgetown Qatar encounters a similar situation that's similar to what Texas faced some point down the line, like let's say 10, 15 years or something like that. So firstly, based on your assessment of the situation, firstly, what's the likelihood of something like this to happen, given like, you know, the contractual kind of technicalities in the way that Georgetown has negotiated a contract with QF and like other different sort of, you know, legal obligations in that aspect, whatever your assessment is in that area. And secondly, for whatever reason, if something like this does happen, what would your first instinct be? How would you expect Hoyas to react in this case?
Okay, so as for the likelihood of this happening to Georgetown, to be honest, I can't say, like, I would hope that it's very low. I hope it's very, very low, in fact. But I can't say much because, like, as you already mentioned, Saad, that you guys had a great relationship with your main campus, and all we students can analyze that through from a very far away lens is how our relationship is with the main campus. But at the end, that relationship really didn't matter when the decision was being taken. So you guys were blindsided, like you said, and external factors came into play. So no one could have predicted this, right? So similarly, I cannot predict what will happen, what will not happen. All I can comment on is the relationship we have with our main campus. And I believe it's very strong, especially with the new dean taking up certain initiatives where he's engaging both the main campus and Qatar's campus. I would like to believe that the relationship is very strong and it's going very good. So I would hope that it's very unlikely for this to happen to Georgetown. But at the same time, you never know, right, of any external factors. So that's that. But as for the reaction of the student body of Georgetown, I feel like people in Georgetown are, since we're studying politics, we're generally more inclined towards political debate. Yeah. We're inclined towards fiery questions, fiery debates, and being more proactive on social media, more proactive with our voices.
No offense to engineers, by the way.
But that's how the student body is. So I feel like it would be worse for Georgetown students. The reaction would be worse. I feel like talking to you guys, I feel like Texas students, obviously it was bad for them, but they still took it, as you said, they took it in a lighter manner eventually, after the town hall, as you mentioned, after the efforts the university did to increase the motivation of the students. But I feel like Georgetown students would really be disturbed by this, and they would be really vocal about this, and they wouldn't hesitate in getting their messages across to the main campus, to the administration, to the board of governors in a very fiery manner. So, but I hope that doesn't happen.
One thing I'll mention what Abdullah said is that Texas A&M is kind of a public university, and I think that's a huge difference between Georgetown and Texas A&M, because we come under the government per se, and you guys are kind of like a private institution. It's funny because we as friends were sitting around, and then we opened up these legal documents and we were trying to find if there's a way to kind of reverse this decision. Apparently it said there's a 30-day appeal, but you can do, but obviously, you know, like...
It's been more than 30 days.
It's been more than 30 days, but I don't think anyone would care to do that appeal. But I think you guys are lucky in that way because it's a private institution. And yeah. I think the day they feel it might not be financially beneficial, I think that's where the issue will be. But I don't think politically, you guys won't shut down due to your political reason, in my view.
But yeah, speaking of like adopting like hardline kind of stances towards a situation like this, there have been a number of speculations regarding, you know, Texas A&M's departure being linked to nuclear research and the possibility of some kind of classified data breach or something of that sort. So I know that your president released a statement to correct such kind of misinformation by stating that despite whatever, you know, recent online reports have suggested, Texas A&M at Qatar does not offer a nuclear engineering program or any, you know, classes on that subject or anything in that, any form of research in that aspect. But how effective do you think the overall response has been towards addressing such kind of speculations? Because they have been very, very prevalent up until now. And given the degree of absurdity that these kind of speculations may sound off at face value, like, don't you think that a much harder stance could have been adopted?
So this information is more of a hoax. It's like misinformation. And the more like mind you put to misinformation, the more you talk about it, the more it spreads. So instead of letting it spread like a wildfire, you just don't talk about it. Let it die by itself. That's, I think, a better ideology. And that's what like our dean suggested.
Yeah, I think that's the approach our university took. We didn't really want to put any light to these rumors. And I mean, I don't know any faculty who does nuclear engineering or anything. I have a background in that in our university. So I think that was just rumors and people just trying to spread narrative which isn't true at all. So yeah, like Mohammed said, it's just rubbish.
Yep. And basically we only have four majors, that's electrical, mechanical, chemical and petroleum. And none of these are linked to nuclear research or nuclear like education related to nuclear in any form. So it's a bit unrelated, honestly.
I'll go a bit off topic at the second, but I think misinformation is kind of like this huge issue in media outlets and things, and people just believe whatever they read, even on social media. I mean, on Twitter, we have this thing that Elon Musk has made, which is what you can readers something. I don't remember what it's called. Notes. Reader's notes. So that has helped like reduce misinformation, but I think that's just an issue that news just spreads like fire, even if it's false. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that the responsibility also like falls upon, you know, the listener or the viewer in this aspect, as well as to how essentially they you know, weigh their sources and, you know, try and make more sense of things. So moving onwards, Abdullah, I have the second hypothetical scenario for you now, but I'll spare you the burden for this one. And this one, generally like open the floor for everyone to just like, you know, jump in at any point. So given how, you know, these developments have taken place in Texas A&M, let's assume that Qatar Foundation has hired you guys as consultants to, you know, deal with the ongoing situation.
I failed all my consulting interviews, just so you guys know.
But still, like, here's your second shot. Let's hope, like, McKinsey recruiters are listening to this podcast, and maybe this is your way back in for some reason. So let's say QF has hired you guys as consultants, and now, given the developments that have taken place in Texas, we obviously expect a huge surge of, you know, applicants, like, basically applying to other education city universities. Obviously the traffic was coming into Texas in the earlier years, and you guys had one of the biggest, you know, incoming freshman batch every year, based on, you know, your large campus size. So obviously you'll expect that traffic to divert to other education city universities. At the same time, professors and staff members at Texas A&M would also be looking into other options given how this campus is closing down in the next 4 years. So how would you advise to deal with this kind of an ongoing situation? How would you prepare in advance, considering the infrastructure of education city that you have? What would your steps be? What would your thinking be like?
Okay, before I tell you the steps, there's something that's already been kind of done. That's we've been informed recently that HBKU is kind of taking over our like building, and they're going to have like, they're sort of basically continuing this engineering idea. And they're going to have a build, like Building of Science. Department of Science, I believe.
CSE, I think they're calling it. Computer and Science Engineering.
Yeah, so, and they're going to have more engineering courses. So I don't think it's going to be much of a hurdle. Mm-hmm. Or like, it's more of a speed bump for students who wanted to come to Education City. Not a hurdle as such.
But will Texas A&M be taking in another class for 2028?
No. Not for bachelor's, only for
Chemical Engineering Masters. That's the only one they're going to take in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like this is a good strategy that QS is already implementing about HPKU taking over the campus, because you can't have the huge building vacant with everyone reallocated somewhere else. Obviously, there could be reallocation, because I recently found out that you guys have history courses as well. So the professors involved in courses which overlap with the degrees taught in other EC universities, such as we have a international history department here, can probably be relocated to the other EC universities. But I think what's more logical is HBKU taking over and continuing the same programs under the ambit of HBKU, so that engineering still lives off in Education City. And especially if you look at the Gulf, there is a need for engineers, especially petroleum engineering. So I feel like this is a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. I'll get my chance now to get a job in consulting. look, you're asking after the decision has been made, right? What do we do now?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I think it all comes down to making sure you hear everyone's voices and you kind of like understand the perspective of everyone. When I say everyone, it doesn't mean you go and speak to everyone, but you, at least you try to get an understanding of what's happening. You try to explore the options. I mean, Qatar Foundation had what, two options right now? Three options. Either you completely finish off engineering in Education City, which is not really an option. You get an other internationally recognized university, which itself takes a lot of contracts and a lot of work, or you just do it in-house and you convert it to HBKU, which what they've done. So it's more about taking everyone with you, because I think one of the issues I've seen right now is there's a lot of issues in terms of lack of information for our faculty, for example. They don't know what's going to happen. Freshmen don't know what's going to happen. Those answers kind of have to be answered. Those questions have to be answered from the very start. Take everyone together and kind of make decisions involving all of these main stakeholders. I think if you do that, then at least you have the support of everyone around you, and the transition would be more smooth.
Okay, so you guys spoke about what essentially comes next for the different batches of Texas A&M as the years go on. But before we close off, I would like to, you know, ask you guys as well as to individually what comes next for you guys in the future.
My answer is a bit longer, so you can go first.
Okay, mine's very simple. I'm hoping to do a master's in electrical engineering.
Okay.
In Tamu.
At the main campus.
At the main campus. Yeah. So you're still going to be affiliated with Texas A&M?
He loves Aggie.
Sure. Once you're an Aggie, you're always an Aggie.
You're loyal.
You're loyal. That's nice. That's nice. See, that's the bright side, I'd say.
Of course.
Still associated as an Aggie engineer.
His facial expressions say otherwise, though.
I'm always going to be an Aggie. Remember, like, I got this degree from Texas A&M. It's always going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
Just like Saad, you're getting this degree from
Texas. Out of curiosity, what's going to happen on Aggie Ring Day? Aggie Ring Day is still happening, right? That's the day we get our rings, basically, really? After you complete a certain number of credit hours.
Oh, wow.
So I got my last semester. These guys are getting it this semester. But with the closure, I'll be a host for a second here.
I'm gonna how's
it going to affect you?
I'm going to get my ring, regardless.
Regardless.
How would you feel getting that ring now?
I'm going to get my ring.
Never mind, man. We'll have a different guest next time.
But I feel like if we have a freshman from Texas here, his thinking would be different than Mugi's.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, since I've already... For me, honestly, it's a normal experience. Like someone from batch of 2019 or 2019 or 2018 had.
Yeah.
Normal 4 years, and then you just graduate like normal.
Yeah. Our batch has had many hiccups. Started with COVID, and it had this, and I think we had something in between as well.
Oh yeah, but like
it's something as such.
We didn't have this issue.
Yeah.
So it's a normal university experience, just like you guys.
Yeah.
You're gonna graduate like normal. You're gonna have like lower classmen, and they're gonna like your overall social growth and your educational growth. Both are gonna be aligned. But for like freshmen right now, it's a bit different.
Yeah, because you do feel tied to your university, like that legacy. Sure. And like us, we've told to embody the Hoya spirit over here at Georgetown. And
Both the Aggie spirit.
I don't know. What does it stand for?
We'll talk about this after the podcast.
I'm curious.
We have posters lying everywhere. I take you on a campus tour.
Go around campus, you'll find the Hoya spirit. Okay. So I feel like that spirit, the Aggie spirit, I believe is what you guys call it, would be missing in the freshmen.
I kind of wouldn't entirely say it's missing, but it's a bit less maybe.
Probably.
Saad, what comes for you next?
Man, I never wanted to do engineering per se. I just did it because I was okay at school when it came to STEM courses. That's what I did in my A-levels as well. I have always had this interest in politics and public policy. I remember in year 13, I wrote down next 20 years in life. It was like do a bachelor's in engineering, then transition to some political degree, and then try to get into public policy. So I'm still going to try to pursue that, but I don't know what's going to happen.
I heard Georgetown has like international politics for bachelors and stuff. Like you should have considered that.
Yeah, I know. I didn't think of it back then. I was like, let's just get the engineering degree because I don't know why, man.
Just saying, our dean, the dean of the School of Foreign Service, has an engineering degree.
There we go.
See, engineers are the best.
You have a bright future.
Okay, so to close it off, I'll just like reflect on the role of institutional legacy. Obviously, you guys are associated with the ecosystem of Texas A&M, just the same way as we associated with ourselves with Georgetown. Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's just like no matter the place where we're graduating from, it's basically, I would say, the journey essentially. That really is something for us to look back on and reflect back on. And that's something that we'll take with us moving forward. So regardless of the institution that we're graduating from, it's the people we meet along the way, it's the experiences we gain that are of utmost importance. So I wish you guys the very best of luck for your future endeavors. Thank you so much for showing up for this podcast. And we really hope we get more chances to collaborate with Texas A&M and other students from Texas A&M over the next 4 years and give our best farewell to them in the best way possible. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you
so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of GUQ Speaks. We hope you've gained valuable insights and inspirations from our conversation today. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to follow us on our Instagram page @GUQ_speaks and be sure to leave a review on Spotify to show your support.